This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards. Along with the military war on terrorism, another war is being waged, a war for the hearts and minds of the Islamic world. Many Americans believe it's just as important to win the battle of ideas because the virulent anti-Americanism in Muslim countries is helping to create a steady supply of terrorists. NPR's Mara Liasson reports.
Like many Americans, President George Bush has been stunned by the intense resentment of the U.S. in the Arab world.
I'm amazed that there's such misunderstanding of what our country is about that people would hate us. I am, like most Americans, I just can't believe it, because I know how good we are, and we got to do a better job of making our case.
The administration is trying to do a better job, sending its top officials to explain the U.S. point of view on Al Jazeera, the Arab equivalent of CNN, and meeting with movie producers to discuss what Hollywood can do. But to political scientist Shilby Telhami, those efforts missed the point. There is a role for public diplomacy, Telhami says, but the U.S. by itself can't win the war for hearts and minds.
There is no question that the battle with terrorism is first and foremost a battle of ideas, but it's wrong to think of it as a war of ideas that the U.S. is waging with the region. It is a war of ideas within the region.
The war of ideas in the Muslim world pits extremists like Osama bin Laden, who promote the seductive argument that America is the evil behind all the problems in the region, and moderates who want to solve the problems without violence. But right now, this war of ideas is a lopsided one, says Imam Anwar Awlaki, the prayer leader at the Dar el-Hijra Mosque in Falls Church, Virginia.
It is the radical voices that are taking over, the ones who are willing to enter into an armed confrontation with their governments. So basically what we have now is that all of the moderate voices are silenced in the Muslim world.
Awlaki, whose mosque is one of the largest in the U.S., sees himself as a Muslim leader who could help build bridges between Islam and the West. But political scientist Telhami says these are difficult days for Muslim moderates.
I have been watching the media throughout this period, and when a militant raises an argument about how to create change, how to transform a situation that everybody agrees is unacceptable, the moderates don't have an answer. What the U.S. therefore should focus on is empowering those majorities who reject the ideas of the militants to help them come up with a positive vision to wage their own war of ideas.
The U.S. would be giving moderates an important piece of intellectual ammunition, Telhami says, if it was able to revive the Middle East peace talks. But there's another problem in the battle for hearts and minds. Of the 56 countries in the Arab League, not one is a democracy. In many nations, including several prominent U.S. allies, radical fundamentalism is the only form of dissent allowed. Some governments encourage anti-Americanism as a way to deflect dissatisfaction with their own corruption.
Before September 11th, a lot of people in the United States wrote off that part of the world.
Carl Gershman is the head of the National Endowment for Democracy, a congressionally funded institute that supports democracy activists around the world.
They felt that, you know, the culture was somehow not suitable for democracy. The threat of fundamentalism was too great, and that therefore authoritarianism was the only option. I think that was a common view. I think people realize in the long run this issue is going to have to be addressed. Because if it isn't, these countries are breeding grounds for terrorists.
Gershman says it's not easy to work in the Islamic world. Some opposition groups are also anti-democratic, and some countries are so closed it's impossible for organizations like Gershman's to offer resources or assistance. In Egypt, the government recently jailed the country's most prominent civil rights activist. Among other things, Saad Eddin Ibrahim was charged with receiving grants from foreign organizations, like the European Union. Ibrahim's wife, Barbara, spoke to NPR after the sentencing.
I think that the anger in the state security system does stem from his monitoring of elections in 1995, his training of young people to be monitors in their own country of the election process, his encouraging of people to vote. Basic work on democracy was not acceptable to some parts of the establishment.
The State Department protested Ibrahim's sentence, but moderates like Imam Awlaki are waiting for the U.S. government to do more.
There doesn't have to be a dramatic, sudden, overnight change in these regimes, but there needs to be at least some pressure on the part of the U.S. for these regimes to open up a bit and provide more freedom to the people.
Many believe that kind of pressure will have to be part of any long-term U.S. strategy to counter the violent anti-Americanism in the Muslim world. But in the short term, because repressive governments like Saudi Arabia, Egypt, or Pakistan are also key allies in the anti-terror coalition, encouraging democracy in the region will likely take a back seat to the military campaign. Mara Liasson, NPR News, Washington.